Good afternoon and welcome to Dublin Speaker's Corner. It's about the fifth week of this experiment with free speech. Now, I believe that the practice of free speech and free expression is even more central to democracy than the elections coming up. And that with free speech, you have to use it or lose it. Because the powers that be that run our society are not committed to democracy. They don't want you to be citizens curious about ideas or criticisms of what's happening in your society. What they want you to be is basically passive consumers, to believe that the only freedom you have is at the point of consumption, the free choice to choose between Nike and Reebok, Pepsi and Coke. If you wander out of that kind of remit and expect some freedoms in your society or at your workplace or in your school, then you're going to have a few problems. One of the problems we're experiencing at the moment is that five of us are awaiting trial here in Dublin. We've been waiting quite a while, been waiting for 14 months. 14 months ago, we made our way to Shannon Airport, and with simple household hammers, we're able to disable part of the US war machine, a Navy war plane that was heading to Iraq, that was to be part of the invasion, occupation, and plunder. And now we know through the mainstream media, even, the rape and abuse of Iraqi people. So with simple household hammers, we were able to disarm this Navy warplane. We knelt in prayer and were arrested and held in Limerick prison for quite some time. I was in there for a month. Another woman was in there for up to 3 months. We've been released on bail for 6 months. We had to sign on daily at a police station. We're banned from County Clare. And recently, we've had that ban lifted. We're banned from a 5 mile radius of Shannon Airport. And we have to sign on at Pier Street twice a week. We face a maximum of 10 years imprisonment if we're convicted. What is the significance of Shannon Airport? Well, it's quite significant. It's significant because on the 25th of June, the warlord George W. Bush will be landing there. And we're working on a non-violent reception for him. But the day-to-day grind at Shannon Airport is that it's become a pit stop for the US war machine. Over 10,000 US troops have been transiting through Shannon Airport since January of last year. It's risen to 16,000 in the last couple of months. And the reason we're taking so long to come to trial is because our trial judge said to us, you may have a reasonable excuse for doing what you're doing. We've been charged with $2.5 million criminal damage to the warplane and €200 damage to the hangar's window. And he said it's possible that you're innocent of those charges. You may have a reasonable excuse, and I'm going to order the prosecution to provide evidence that they have that may be central to your defence. And that's quite a legal obligation. If you're charged with an armed robbery, you can apply to the judge for discovery of the videotape in that bank to prove you weren't there or whatever. Now, instead of the prosecution providing that evidence in January, they've refused to do that and have initiated a judicial review against the judge's order. Now, they've done that for either of two reasons. One is that the Irish government have been so sycophantic and so negligent in the selling out of neutrality that they had not bothered to check with their customs officers what's been moving back and forth through this country. We know from the Ed Horgan case, Ed Horgan was a commandant of the Irish Defence Forces. He spent 23 years in the Irish Defence Forces. And last year, during the war, he took the government to court, saying he was acting unconstitutionally, allowing a belligerent force, without the consult of Dáil Éireann at the time, to pass through the country. And we know from his discovery that napalm was moving through this country, that cruise missile components were moving through this country. We don't know, and it's quite probable, whether people have been kidnapped in Afghanistan and Iraq and been shanghaied to Guantanamo Bay Gulag are being moved through. We don't know, but it's quite probable that the body bags of young Americans who the government slapped on the back, who the Arianta sold duty free to, have come back in body bags, maybe being moved through Shannon Airport. We do know that this war is expansive. We do know that the government, by allowing the US military to transform a civilian airport into a military pit stop, had made the environment or Ireland a lot more insecure for all of us. Because this war, like all modern warfare, has involved the indiscriminate killing of men, women and children. And we know from our own experience in Dublin, when the poor fight back, they fight back not in a conventional way, but in a guerrilla way. I think it was the late Peter Ustinov who said, war is the terrorism of the rich. Terrorism is the war of the poor. This week in Dublin, the Irish government hosted a US warship, the La Salle. The La Salle in 1992 was deployed to the Persian Gulf and spent much of the 90s there. And its role was to enforce a genocidal sanctions regime initiated by the UN. A genocidal sanctions regime that by the end of the 90s had killed over 500,000 children under the age of 5. And when Madeleine Albright, a Holocaust survivor, a liberal, the foreign secretary for Bill Clinton, was confronted with that statistic that 500,000 children had died because of the sanctions, she said it's worth the price. Incredible. The sanctions were enforced by the British, American, Australian navies and the British, American Air Force throughout the 90s. This ship was welcomed here this week, and it's carrying on it depleted uranium munitions. It's highly likely that depleted uranium munitions move regularly through Shannon Airport. Depleted uranium munitions, like the sanctions themselves, are weapons of mass destruction. The British and American military have had control of Iraq for over 14 months, and they have found no weapons of mass destruction. The weapon of mass destruction of the 1990s in Iraq was the sanctions. But depleted uranium munitions, which made their debut in the first Gulf War, are a weapon that kills, not kills once, but kills generation after generation. Many British and American Gulf War vets are suffering with leukemias and cancers, giving birth to children with massive deformities because they had to enter battlefields that were radioactive because of the use of depleted uranium. In the first Gulf War, US and British forces fired over 14,000 11-pound shells from tanks in Iraq. They fired over 1 million half-pound bullets, and those bullets are mostly fired by warthogs, a plane that has a huge Gatling gun on it. And the best thing that the masters of war had come up with to pierce armour. But they leave the battlefields of Iraq, of Serbia, and of Afghanistan radioactive for centuries. And they not only kill and poison the civilians of Iraq, they've killed and poisoned US troops and British troops. So the ship that came in here this week was carrying depleted uranium. It had been used extensively in the genocidal sanctions of the 1990s. Shannon Airport hosts over 10,000 US troops passing through to Iraq each month. And also a concern for Ireland is that there are over 1,000 Irish mercenaries deployed in Iraq at the moment. There are 600 former members of the RUC and 400 former members of the Northern Ireland prison officers who are earning up to £1,000 a day as mercenaries, basically running their own long cash in Iraq. Because what you have in Iraq is internment. You have people being picked up, you have people being disappeared, you have people being hooded, you have children being raped, you have people being sexually abused by US and British forces, many of them not involved in the armed resistance at all. And we know from our experiences in Northern Ireland in the 70s what that breeds. That breeds more terrorism, that decreased terrorism. Because after you humiliate a people and rape their children, as US forces have done, that have clearly done, that they did extensively in Vietnam, people do not give up struggle against colonialists. They fight back, and they fight back with whatever means possible. Now in our situation, we have an opportunity in the first world to resist non-violently. And I'm coming from a radical Christian perspective. And we felt 14 months ago that we had to act on what clearly was coming. A massacre why we made our way to Shannon Airport, and that's why we made our way into a hangar and disarmed part of the US war machine. That's why we're unveiled. That's why we want to go as soon as possible before 12 Irish people and say, this is what we did, and this is why we did it. And the prosecution are obviously very fearful of letting us in front of 12 Irish people to tell that story. And they're even rejecting the judge's order to provide evidence essential to our case. I was in a courtroom in 1996 in Liverpool where four women had been held in jail for 6 months following their disarmament of a British aerospace Hawk fighter which was being sold to the genocidal dictatorship of Suharto in Indonesia to be used against the people of East Timor, were brought before the courts in Liverpool. Now the scousers that were dragged into court to be the jury had never heard of East Timor before. And after 2 weeks of testimony from the four women who were being brought back and forth to jail each day, from people such as John Pilger, who did investigatory journalism in East Timor in the 90s, from survivors of British and American planes flown by Indonesian pilots that had killed their brothers and sisters, those 12 Liverpool people said, yes, there's a crime here. It's not with four women who've been charged with £2.5 million of criminal damage. The crime is with British aerospace and the British government selling a high-tech death machine to a genocidal dictatorship. And that jury found those women not guilty. And it's a great experience to be in that courtroom at that time. I spent over a year in jail in the United States during the first Gulf War. I was privileged to be part of a community that made its way to Griffiths Air Force Base in upstate New York. And 2 weeks before George Daddy Bush's deadline, we were able to offer some kind of lifeline by disarming a B-52 bomber that was nuclear armed at that stage that was on 10-minute scramble alert. Unfortunately, after the FBI arrested us and we were in prison, those B-52s from Griffiths were deployed to England and daily did bombing runs on Iraq. They dropped napalm, they dropped cluster bombs, and they dropped a fuel air explosive. And in one of the most cynical military actions at the end of the first Gulf War, when the Iraqi conscripts were fleeing back to Iraq, which was the UN demand to leave Iraq, the US Air Force cynically stopped their retreat by bombing the highway in front of them, bombing the highway behind them, creating a traffic jam of thousands of vehicles, and then weapon testing the fuel air explosive, which unleashes a mist of gasoline, ignites it, and if you ever see the very suppressed photos from that highway, you'll see images that are very much like Nagasaki and Hiroshima. But the fuel air explosive, which has since been used extensively by the Russians in Chechnya, has a yield very similar to a small nuclear weapon. And for the next 3 days, US helicopter gunships went up and down that highway, shooting anything that moved, while other armored bulldozers were filling in the trenches on the battlefields containing Iraqi wounded. Now one of the men who buried people alive, and you can read his letters, one of the men who walked up the highway of death shortly after the end of that war was Timothy McVeigh. Now Timothy McVeigh was a US Gulf War vet. He obviously went home a very sick puppy and he blew up the Oklahoma Federal Building. The Washington sniper, who killed over a dozen people last year, I don't know if you remember that, was also a Gulf War vet. You cannot train young men and women to kill and to torture and to abuse and expect that not to come home to your own society. I spent 3 years in the States working in soup kitchens for the homeless, and I met many Vietnam vets used and abused, exploited and abandoned by their governments in there. I spent 13 months in jails in the United States. I met many Vietnam vets used, abused and abandoned by their government. And over 53,000 US military died in Vietnam. More than 53,000 committed suicide on the way back. Our action at Shannon was not against young Americans going to Iraq. Our action at Shannon was in defense of them and in defense of the people of Iraq. And it's interesting the court-martials this week that have occurred. The first court-martial from the torture dungeons of Iraq, the first court-martial, the first cab off the rank was the guy who took the photos. Not the guy who sexually abused the prisoner, not the woman who had the guy by the leash. The first guy they nailed was the guy who took the photos. That's a big crime in terms of the powers that be. On the same day he was being court-martialed, another man was being court-martialed, a man who was in the prison, who had to abuse Iraqi soldiers, Iraqi detainees under border belt, so went home on furlough, refused to report to duty, denounced the war, initially went underground and surfaced. He also was court-martialed this week in the United States. So you have the ironic situation of people who stayed in the prison there, following orders, being court-martialed and soon to be sentenced. And you have a man who refuses to continue that activity, refusing to report for that kind of duty, being court-martialed and sentenced. They use the rank-and-file troops like cannon fodder. The elites do not send their own children. Not one member of Congress has a child in the US military at the moment. George W. Bush avoided the draft by getting his way into the Texas National Guard in the 1960s. Cheney avoided the draft by a number of deferments. Sylvester Stallone went and taught school in Switzerland, came back and made a fortune out of Vietnam movies. The elites do not send their own children. And they beat the drum of nationalism, they beat the war drum. They say you're either for us or against us. And what do we get from the Irish government? We get total sycophancy, we get a total sellout of any kind of independent foreign policy. But they believe the lie, they push the lie, they don't believe it, that if you actually did make a moral stance against this war, that would have huge ramifications in the diaspora in the United States, in Australia and Britain, amongst Irish American soldiers and citizens, amongst Irish Australian soldiers and citizens, amongst Irish people in the diaspora in England. If you did make a moral stance, that there would be a great capital flight from Ireland. That is ridiculous, and it was denounced not by any long-haired radical. It was denounced February last year by the former New York mayor, Republican Juliana. It was denounced and said, you're an independent country. You should have an independent foreign policy, whatever you decide that is. And like France and Germany, you could oppose this war. And that American companies are here for one reason. That is to make a profit out of the labour, a well-trained labour force that speaks English and can be a bridge to Europe for them. And they will go when they don't make profit. Now, you take a country like New Zealand, which has the same population, maybe 40 million more sheep, that make a moral stance in the 1980s. They say no nuclear warships into New Zealand. They experience all sorts of pressures from the United States government, all sorts of pressures from the Australian Labor Party government at the time. They suspended all visits, they suspended all military cooperation, and the Prime Minister of New Zealand went to America during that period. It was not greeted by the State Department, it was welcomed by Yoko Ono. But New Zealand made a moral stance, and they survived, economically. Ireland is in the EU, you wonder why, you know, what's the deal here? But we're in a war, and I hope you go and see Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 911, that just won the war to Keynes. Because one of the points this film will make is that Bin Laden is a creation of the United States. Just as Manuel Noriega was, and just as Saddam Hussein was. And it's to understand the war that we're involved in, because the people whose children we are killing see us as a legitimate target. And it doesn't take any great jump of logic to work out why that is. To understand the war we're involved in, you must understand the nature of the Saudi Arabian regime. Because on those planes that hit on September 11th, the Twin Towers, the vast majority of the people hijacking those planes were not Afghanis. There were no Afghanis on those planes. They were Saudi Arabians. And the Saudi government, the Saudi royal family, who I think US government have written off, they know they're going to fall. The Saudi government provided young men in the 1980s for the CIA to train to go to Afghanistan to fight the Soviets. And one of those young men was very wealthy, from a very wealthy family, Osman bin Laden. He was trained by the CIA, armed by the CIA. The CIA acknowledged this. And when he turned against America, it was with the first Gulf War, when the Saudi Arabia became a base for the United States. They had over 10,000 US troops in a country the Islamic population regard as the Holy Land. And that the demand of September 11th, why that was carried out, was to get US military out of Saudi Arabia. And they've done that. They've achieved that. US military have surrendered to bin Laden's demand. They've moved their headquarters to Qatar and the vast majority of their military out of there. They've now put out a warning to US citizens not to go to Saudi Arabia, or if you're not essential, to leave, because the Saudi royal family cannot provide your security. Now, you look back in history, you look at the Middle East, you see all those borders, like the borders in Africa, were drawn up by the French and the British, basically to provide secure future investments and exploitation of the region. Arabia was, that the Saud royal family could run the politics as a dictatorship, they could torture people, behead them on a weekly basis, if they let Wahhab sect run the religion. So no other form of Islam is allowed there, let alone Christianity or Judaism being practiced. Now that deal has been secure for 40 or 50 years. The Saudi government has acted as a puppet for the United States in the region. But the Saudi family are an amazing collection of hedonists. They run this very uptight Islamic society that piss off to the brothels and casinos of Europe at every opportunity. So the true believers, people like bin Laden, who are willing to live in a cave for 20 years or whatever, say we don't need the Saudi family. We can run this region as a theocracy, like Iran was, the Iranian revolution. That's the tension you have in Saudi Arabia. That's why September 11th happened, and that's why the Americans feel they can't retreat from Iraq. But they are just about to lose all the royal families they set up there many years ago. And that's why they're building permanent bases in Iraq. Ireland is central to this. Ireland is the bridge between Fort Benning, where many of these troops come from. They land at Shannon, they go through a base in Sicily, and they land in Iraq. And if you look at where most of them are coming from, they're coming from Fort Benning. Now, Fort Benning is a serious terrorist training camp. The sniper that killed Salvadoran Bishop Romero while he was saying mass was trained at Fort Benning in Georgia. The Atlantica Battalion that killed the six Jesuits and the two Salvadoran women working with them were trained at the School of the Americas in Georgia. And there are Americans who are seriously confronting terrorism and weapons of mass destruction. But the way this war has been sold is that it was a war against terror and a war against weapons of mass destruction. The Americans who are serious about confronting those issues, and they are serious issues, many of them end up in jail. Because every anniversary of the Atlantica Battalion's massacre of the Jesuits in El Salvador, they go down to Fort Benning. There were 10,000 people there last November 16th. About 50 trespass, and they're sentenced to 6 months to a year in jail. Meanwhile, in terms of weapons of mass destruction, three Dominican nuns trespassed or jumped the fence at an ICBM missile silo in Colorado, an intercontinental ballistic missile silo that houses underground nuclear chip missiles that can fly all over the world, and they carried out a weapons inspection. They're now serving 2 and 3 years in prison. That's what happens if you seriously investigate. Because the greatest holders of weapons of mass destruction in the world today are the US government. The greatest practitioners of terrorism are the US military. Over 10,000 Colombian troops have been trained in Georgia at Fort Benning in the last 10 years to go home and kill their own people. But we have to look at what is our complicity in that. And our complicity, I believe, are three things. One is inviting USS LaSalle into Dublin Harbour today as a goodwill visit when it's part of a US war machine killing people. One is Shannon Airport, where George Bush is going to land on the 25th of June, that hosts 10,000 US troops on their way to Iraq each month. And one is the reality is that 1,000 people from this island are now working as mercenaries in Iraq. Over 10% of all military in Iraq are private contractors. And the ones involved have been caught out in the sexual abuse in the Iraqi jail. They're not even accountable to military law. They will face no court-martial. They will face no Iraqi charges because Iraqi law doesn't really exist yet. The worst thing they'll face is they'll get sacked by their company. But highly likely, they'll be transferred to Colombia or somewhere like that. That's the reality we're in at the moment. If anyone's got any questions, please ask. Otherwise, it'll be like a circular take loop here.